Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. There are $200 trillion of investable assets across the global financial system, affecting the decision-making of businesses and the lives of billions of people. The World Benchmarking Alliance recognizes the need to scale adaptation to climate risks in the next decade as key to a healthy financial system. The WBA recently published their second annual financial system benchmark to assess the adaptation efforts of 400 major banks, insurers, asset managers, and asset owners. The analysis covers key sustainability areas in governance, climate, nature, and social issues. Nikki Guilliam-Bahare is the head of stakeholder engagement at the World Benchmarking Alliance and my guest for this episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast. Nikki's going to tell us about the WBA's efforts to align these major players in the financial sector and effect positive change in key sustainability areas. Hello, Nikki. And welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hi, great to be here, Paul. Thanks very much. Looking forward to it.
Yes, I've been wanting to have a conversation with someone at the WBA for a couple of years, and we're so glad that you are able to join us today. You guys are very busy. So
it's always busy. Yeah, it's always busy, but I'm very happy to be here and great to hear that you've been following the work for a few years. But yeah.
So we're going to get right into the questions because we've got a lot of ground to cover today. And the first thought that I have is, given the dramatic current and fluid changes in regulatory policy, not only in the U.S. right now, but also in other major global economies, are companies getting clear signals from investors that sustainability action is needed?
Yeah, great. I mean, let's start by thinking about the last few years. We have seen investors increasingly signaling the need for companies to take action on certain topics. If I just take one example of that we've been working with investors on the topic of ethical AI, we've had a group of investors. It's now representing 8.5 trillion assets under management. So a substantial portion of investors who are engaging with companies, therefore sending signals about the action that's needed. So on ethical AI, it's about having the governance structures around those topics. There are other signals. For instance, we've seen investors over the last few years engaging on human rights, particularly in high-risk sectors, using, say, the WBA's corporate human rights benchmark or PRI. We've seen the Advance Initiative kind of mobilizing, working with investors to send those signals to companies. But if the question is there a clear, consistent signal from investors? I would say this isn't the case today. We've seen that this happens in pockets. It happens, it's moving. Nature would be another example of this, where nature is a topic that increasingly investors are engaging and sending signals to companies. But no, Paul, I think if we were saying honestly, realistically today, is there a consistent message from investors to companies? This isn't the signal that they're getting. And I think we'll dig into a bit more of that when we look at the financial system benchmark findings.
Yes, because that's what we're going to talk about next. And that is, how are WBA's efforts to align these 400 major global financial institutions going? And what kinds of regional issues are arising as this effort progresses?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we just published, so it was a month ago now, we were at the World Economic Forum in Davos, and we were publishing our second iteration of the financial system benchmark. So as you said, covering banks, insurers, asset managers, and asset owners globally. And we do see some progress. So I'm not going to talk doom and gloom the whole time today. We do see some progress. We now see that 60% of these financial institutions have assigned responsibility for implementing sustainability across their organization. So there's more clarity and accountability, say, at the board level and in the exec team. We also have seen some progress talking, I mentioned briefly, about nature. So we have seen now that 1 in 10 of these financial institutions are now identifying the impact of their activities, so their financing activities, on nature. So there's some positive signals, some progress. That's like what we like to see. But if we kind of dig into that, look under the hood a bit, for instance, on nature, it's great that there's now this kind of assessment of what is the impact, what we haven't yet seen. So only 2% of the institutions have a strategy in place to then manage the impact. And it's a kind of similar story at the moment on climate. So we have 3% of the financial institutions we've assessed have a climate transition plan in place. So again, going back to the signaling, companies are not getting that kind of clear signal from financial institutions that they have a full climate transition plan. And therefore, the companies themselves will be kind of questioning what direction of travel those financial institutions. So yes, there's some movement, there's some positives. We'll assess them again this year and come up with the results at the beginning of next year. So we are seeing progress in areas that we're looking at, but there are still some pretty big gaps at the moment, Paul.
Okay. All right. Well, let's give our followers some key moments in 2025 for sustainable finance professionals to be aware of and to get involved in this dialogue that WBA is carrying on an ongoing basis with institutions, and especially now in the financial system, with investors and asset managers and the companies themselves in the financial system. What are some key moments coming up this year that people can participate in, whether they are shareholders or asset managers or financial advisors, for example?
Yeah. And I mean, as you said, it's busy for us in WBA. It's busy for anyone working in the sustainable finance space, I think. So I'm just going to zoom in on a few that I wanted to kind of flag and have an awareness of something that areas that we're working on that I think would be of interest to the group that you mentioned and to the listeners. So there are some really big moments this year from a sustainability perspective. For instance, there's the World Summit for Social Development in November. There's the UN Food System Summit in Addis Ababa in July. There's the UN Ocean Conference, for instance, in June. So these are key moments that kind of bring together different stakeholders, including investors. Investors, I think it gives a perspective from not just company and investor shareholder kind of dynamics, but a wider perspective of what are the topics, what are the key issues that other stakeholders and others, including governments, UN bodies, but also a whole range of actors are really focusing on. So that's a flavor. I would say what's really big in that kind of context is going to be COP30 in Brazil. It's a key moment from both a climate and a nature perspective. It's also key because it's going to bring in very clearly, and it's going to build on all the work that's been done so far on the social perspective. So having that just transition, and they just link that to why do we see that important? And I think why others can think about that from a, particularly from the company's perspective. It's important that we see a clarity on what the role is of business. So not just the coalition of the willing that might turn up in Brazil and be active and engaging and involved, but really thinking through how do we then make that a clearer business responsibility. And I'm not just saying that because it's, you know, something of interest for WBA. It's really fundamental, really key. The 2,000 companies that we assess are responsible for 54% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. So when we're talking about focusing on private sector responsibility, and obviously that needs to be in a full picture of public sector responsibility as well. But when we particularly look at private sector, yeah, these are big players. So we're looking to see that those big players have transition plans, but there's also a kind of framework around that that pushes those transition plans forward.
Nikki, if you can send us any materials, reports, or for example, if you have any graphics that can demonstrate how these processes are proceeding through the WBA, that would be very helpful for getting more information out to our followers and getting them more engaged in these processes. So we can attach things to this program when it goes live, and would really appreciate anything that you can provide provide us with. So for now, from your experience in investor company engagement, is it leading to system change at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned a few examples at the beginning where companies, investors have been engaging directly with companies, and it's something that I've been working on for a number of years now. There have been examples of progress. So we've seen companies improving on the topics that investors are engaging on. Just going back to that ethical AI example, now after the first 2 years of investors engaging companies on that topic, we did see movement in the companies we were benchmarking. And we did see that, you know, after the first 2 years, a quarter of the benchmark had put in place their first ethical AI policies. Same on human rights. We see that after 5 years of assessing those companies, but also having investors engaging, we've seen that actually 64% of those companies with high risk from a human rights perspective are showing measurable improvement. So that there is change, but is on its own, is it leading to system change? That's where we're kind of our hesitation and where we would say that that's not enough. Basically, the learning that we've had, so WBA, World Benchmarking Alliance, is a young-ish organization, so existed for just over 6 years now. And what we've really learned and seen, both with the research but also the engagement side, two things. Firstly, it's not about just having one stakeholder group engaging companies. So it's great when shareholders have the assets under management, they're engaging, you know, there is that dialogue and that relationship there. That's good, but on its own, it's not going to lead to that drive of systemic change. It needs to be from diverse stakeholders, even diverse financial institutions, so insurers and banks, but also others, employees, consumers are obviously also key stakeholders from a company point of view, and those that companies work with. So kind of having consultants and auditors and lawyers, it's kind of the full holistic view for a company. So that's one learning, not just one stakeholder, but that kind of multi-stakeholder, but not just everyone doing everything in a kind of targeted way. The other is going beyond this company by company approach. I'm not someone that is kind of fully bought in saying that we should no longer do the company by company approach. I still see that as valuable, both in that it gets the kind of progress from specific companies. It also shows other companies what's possible. But if we're looking again more from the learning of the last few years, it's that we need to go beyond that. We need to look at what the policies are in place, the overarching norms, which is what we call, it might not have the legal hard law, but the UN, as an example, can demonstrate kind of an overarching norm and expectation. These are the levers beyond the company by company approach to kind of raise up, raise the baseline for all companies. So that's a step towards more the system change thinking.
Yes, I've done a number of programs with Ceres in recent years, and that's an organization, as you know, that has been in existence for a couple of decades, and they have corporate membership with a lot of large companies that manage trillions of dollars in assets, and they have a system for creating influence within those companies. They have partners within, et cetera. So these, as you're suggesting, these types of processes take time to build, and the WBA is still a fairly young organization from that perspective. So let's talk a little bit more about the findings of the financial system benchmark for this year, and is that that's a global norm is needed to provide clear guidance on the financial system's responsibility to drive innovation so that capital reaches underrepresented groups, especially be they people, businesses, or countries. How does the WBA participate in the process of establishing this global norm?
Yeah, and as you've highlighted, that was one of our key findings from the benchmark that we've just published. And yeah, institutional investors are a critical part of closing that funding gap. So there's many different parts that need to move, but one is the funding gap. And at the moment, what we've found is that not that many financial institutions, particularly those outside of, say, emerging markets themselves, are really recognizing the role that they can play in capital allocation, and that that's a key lever to unlock that kind of funding gap, but also sustainable development more broadly. So 6% of the institutions we assessed expressed financing support to low and middle income countries. So that's why, and when you see 6%, why we've then shifted that again from a kind of company by company or financial institution by financial institution approach to a norm setting is because of the scale of what needs to change and the speed. So we will continue. We have already been working with asset managers, for instance, some of the work we've been doing over the last few years, and we'll continue that work, providing more guidance to asset managers, encouraging that they ensure that their sustainability strategies don't inadvertently lead to divestment from emerging markets. So that's one lever that's kind of we need to continue. But the norm setting, kind of ramping this up a level, and again, setting more the kind of baseline, a key part of that, which I didn't mention in the 2025 things to look out for, but certainly from more the UN and government perspective, there's a process that's going on at the moment called the UN Finance for Development process. It's been going on now for a few years, but the key moment is in Seville this summer, where there'll be an outcome document. Member states are negotiating in what should be the responsibility and structure for the financial system, and a part of that for private finance. So when we talk about norm setting, it's kind of getting it to that level, building it into texts like UN texts, like this one, but also then working at how do we kind of get more of an agreement and alignment on that point of what it means for capital flows and allocation of capital, particularly into emerging markets. So yeah, UN Finance for Development is a kind of one, another one that I'll put out there as a norm setting moment that's quite key this year.
Yes, you know, these types of international gatherings don't often get I believe, unrealistic press coverage because of the expectation that they're going to be able to accomplish a tremendous amount of progress. And these are very difficult global issues that we're dealing with. I mean, you know, we're barely touching the surface now on what's really needed to address climate change at the global scale. So I really appreciate the work that WBA is doing, and I know a lot of other people do in sustainable finance, because this is a protracted long-term process that we'll just keep working at and never stop, right? So just keep on going. Yeah,
I think that's the point. It's not everyone can be doing everything, but having some clear tools, some clear processes, some ways, as you say, that, you know, the UN, for instance, it's the soft law, but it's the space where there are member states, but other actors. And then, of course, kind of the policy engagement is then key. And yet we do then see, as I've said, the direct shareholder to company engagement is still so important. But it's actually all these layers, so all the different parts of WBA that's focusing on the different layers. And it can takes time, but we're pushing it forward with many other key people, pushing that forward as fast as possible. Because the reality is, despite you mentioned the political side, I mean, despite that, we are seeing signals, and business as well as seeing those signals, the environmental and the social risks are there in many cases kind of becoming more obvious. We don't need to go into kind of the severe weather events, etc. But there are more and more signs for business that these risks exist. So despite or alongside, let's say, the political changes and challenges for business, the physical and the other environmental and social risks are very much front and center now for business. So it's a challenging time, and it's a space that we want to provide to kind of keep pushing forward action based on these kind of sound research and kind of spaces that are open for people to come and learn and use the different tools.
Yes, I think that's the most important message at the moment, is that there are many options for people to participate in these processes, and no one should ever feel like there's no place to go to become active in this kind of program. So, Nikki, listen, where can Sustainable Finance Podcast followers go online to learn more about the WBA's work, and how can they get in touch with you with questions about the topics that we've discussed in today's episode?
Yeah, so the good news is that all of the data, all the insights that I've shared, it's all online, it's all open source. So very much encourage any listener to have a look at the website. I'm really talking about the data sets, company scorecards on those 2000 and those kind of headline key findings. So that's all there. I would also say, if you're interested in specific topics like the ethical AI engagement that I mentioned, or some of these other targeted moments, there are also kind of a lot of information on the website about how to get involved in these. The final thing I'll say specifically for this audience, we do run quarterly investor engagement meetings. They are where myself or my colleagues, we have a few investor engagement colleagues who do updates on the type of topics that I've just said. So even if you're not getting involved actively or pushing a certain topic yourself, you can join these. So I'd just say reach out to me after this podcast and come along and join. So that's a kind of 1 hour session on a quarterly basis. Come and listen, hear updates, and just kind of get involved if you want to. But even if this is just useful context in your work, that's what my main message would be for the listeners. So the website is theworldbenchmarkingalliance.org. So I think that one's easy. And then my email address, you can go to, I think, do you have my name here? But it's n.gwilliambahari at theworldbenchmarkingalliance.org. I can definitely share it as well. It might be easier. It's not an easy surname.
That's fine, because we like to post those things as part of the programs. And if there are any recent press releases or information about particular programs that people can get involved with, whether it's through the United Nations or directly through the WBA, that would be helpful as well. We like to attach those kinds of notices. The other thing is that we are looking to spice up these programs a little bit with a good graphic that might represent some study that the WBA is engaged in, or some resources that are being used to make sure that people understand and have a visual contact for this kind of participation as well. So anything like that would be appreciated.
Yeah, I can send that. And I should just say one final thing is that we're then in the process this year of assessing again all 2000 companies. So I didn't extend what to watch out for, but into 2026. But in January 2026, we'll go back to the annual meeting at the World Economic Forum in Davos and make sure we have a view of all 2000 companies again. So again, a kind of a moment beyond 2025, but something important if people are looking for a check-in of how things are moving. I think that's this time next year will be a key moment to see that progress. So yeah, great. I'm happy to share.
Well, thank you very much, Nikki Gwilliambahari of the World Benchmarking Alliance, for joining me today. And we welcome our followers to join me again next week for another episode. I'm Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.